Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hi, Jordana.
Hi, Paige.
So I'm curious about something. When you are noticing that you've just spent so much time on screens and you're done. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know that feeling when you're just like, I cannot look at this little rectangle anymore.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
What are some of the things you do to kind of take yourself analog?
I think the first thing, I've got a few things I go to. The easiest first thing is to read a book. Yes. If I'm feeling a bit like antsy, then I'll go to the park and just, I have a favorite tree. So I go sit under my tree in the park. Yeah, they're the first things I would probably go to.
Yeah.
When I'm feeling right. That way. Yeah.
And with books, do you find that part of the experience for you is like the physical experience of holding the book and smelling the book and all of that?
Yeah, I think it's two things. Yeah, one, the physical experience of it, and also just I can't be a bit distracted by anything else when right. I'm reading a book. I'm not, you know, reading a book and checking something else, which mm-hmm. is so easy to do when you're on your laptop.
Yes.
So yeah. I love that kind of solitary feeling of by myself reading a book with nothing else disturbing or distracting me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no notifications that slide
exactly,
down.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's just such a joy. It is so. I just love it. Yeah. I've been reading a lot more in the last year or so. Probably that's your influence as well, because I know how many books you read. Here, I'm like, oh my God, if Paige can do it, I can do it too. I need to make more time. So I have, I've been conscious about making more time to read in the evenings. And it's just makes me feel lighter afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really nothing like it, you know, in terms of, I don't know, there's something about reading, for me anyway, that's so restorative and relaxing. I know it's not that way for everyone, but for me, reading is kind of a refuge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? So obviously you read. Are there any other things you do when you want to go analog?
Yes. Well, I do read, and I am not a purist when it comes to the form that my books come in. I do not care whether they are on paper or they're on my iPad, or like I'm listening to them. I don't care. And because, as you know, we have a very small space and we have a pet rabbit who likes to eat paper and cardboard. I have recently had to remove many, many books from our home because they were getting shredded to tiny bits. And that is always heartbreaking. That has broken my heart every time I've ever had to do that. And I've had to do it many times in my life because my homes are small. But he's worth it. The rabbit's worth it. I love him so much. So I read on my iPad is the long way of saying that. Yeah. I almost never read a physical book. I don't have space for them. And so I don't have them, but, I think the main thing I do that I would do online that I prefer to do analog, or like when I'm tired of being online, that I'll do is writing by hand.
Okay.
I love to write. When I'm writing something that I know is going to eventually need to be in pixels on a screen, I tend to prefer to type it out first. But if I'm just writing for myself, and even sometimes when I'm writing a draft of something, Even often, I would say, let me revise that. Even often when I'm writing a draft, like a very first draft or ideas, I will do that by hand. And I really love the feeling of the paper under my hand, the pen in my hand, all of that kind of thing. I love.
Do you feel like your creativity flows more when you're using a like pen and paper? Or it
I
doesn't
think it's
make much
just,
difference?
I think it's just different. It's just a different form. It's kind of like, I don't know, the difference between what, like mixing something by hand versus using a mixer, a hand mixer.
Okay. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You know, like
Yeah.
they get the job done. They both get the job done. One's just a different experience in your body, you know. And I actually really prefer mixing by hand to using a hand. There's something about like the slowness of it, you know. I think the slowness of writing by hand creates a different thought process, you know, or a different relationship to the thought process than when I'm clickety-clackety typing away, you know. And there is something to the textural element, and this is something we talk about with today's guest, like the feelings, the textures, the relationship between yourself and the thing you're making, or yourself and the thing you're interacting with. I do think there's something visceral and beautiful about the experience of, yes, feeling my hand moving, feeling the pen on the paper, watching the words kind of unfurl under the pen is quite beautiful.
Yeah, then I think like every time I go back to the UK, I always buy at least, I want to say 5 to 10 magazines to bring back. Because I love, I that's like, that is part of my morning ritual. Even though some of the magazines I probably read most of them already, it's just nice to flick through, even if I'm not reading, just kind of skimming. It's just a nice way to transition from the chaotic morning into like, creative pursuit or, work day or what have you. And I find that much more soothing than, yeah, checking Instagram or checking something on my phone. Yeah. Like you say, having something in your hands, that texture, that, visual off a screen is just more relaxing. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And I will say part of why I can read on my iPad is that there are no notifications on it.
Oh,
I do
really?
not.
Okay.
Yes. it's like a very closed off space for me on the iPad is very creative for me. I draw on it also. I do certain things on it and there are no notifications that come. So
Yeah.
that
It
doesn't
is interesting. Hey, I really struggle to read books on a device. Or
Yeah,
listen, like audiobooks as well. I can't, I really struggle with it. So I'm always like, how does Paige do it? I'm always like in awe of that you're able to do that because I struggle so much.
I think the format really matters a lot for people and with different things. Like there are some things where format really matters to me, you know. For whatever reason, reading isn't one of them. I don't know why that is. I almost have sometimes felt like I have an addiction to words. I love words so much. I cannot get enough of them. And whatever form they're coming in, I want them.
Yeah, that's what I feel like the difference is, like you have this like hunger to either to learn or to read, get that creative inspiration. Whereas for me, I think maybe it's more relaxation slash enjoying a good story. The depth of wanting to do that thing is probably different for both of us.
And because I think what is part of what you said there is really key for me is that when I am running errands or doing something that I find dreary or boring, when I'm folding laundry, when I'm washing dishes, I don't need the input, you know, but I like it a lot. I like having something to engage my mind during those times. And I like to just, I don't know, spend time with other people's ideas.
Yes.
And it helps me also to, because there's a drudgery to being a mother and doing the work of motherhood. and not just being a mother, like, you know, running an adult life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a drudgery to certain aspects of it that I really get resentful about. And if I can use, and I don't enjoy the feeling of being resentful, but if I can use that time that also for myself, you know,
yeah,
and I feel I'm learning and I feel I'm growing, then all of that resentment fades away. I don't feel it at all.
Time passes in a more enjoyable way if you have that.
Yeah, it's kind of like I am part of it too. I'm not just a machine to get these things done. You know, I'm not a useful worker. Like, I am learning. I'm engaged. I'm growing. I'm interested in something at the same time. So for me, that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's interesting how we all have our different ways of engaging or, like, bringing things in, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And how different those things are based on the form they come in. Because I do think they are. And that's part of what we talk about today with our guest, Kat, who is a photographer and an all-around creative human who's originally from the UK and has been living in Japan for around 10 years. And she has this amazing eye for what is around us in daily life, wouldn't you say?
Yes, she really does. Like, her photography, you know, one is so beautiful and interesting to look at. And it just makes me realize how much I don't notice in my daily life, because probably I would just walk past a lot of the things that she's taken a photo of and not think twice. But she's recognized it and captured it in such a way that makes me look at Tokyo in a different way. I'm like, oh, it is nicer than I realize sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it is, there's so many just like fascinating surfaces and shapes and colors, and their relationship to each other is something that she really draws attention to and invites us to pay attention to.
Yeah, I love the way that she spoke about, you know, how she captures the images and what have you and why, and yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's a great conversation. Please have a listen to our conversation with Kat Chetram. Originally from London in the United Kingdom, Kat Chetram has lived in Tokyo since 2014. While her primary medium is photography, Kat also dabbles in graphic design, writing, and painting. Kat's street photography invites viewers to get curious about ourselves, others, and the world around us, so that we might find presence, compassion, understanding, and connection. While those invitations may be issued most of the time through her camera lens, Kat explores a wide variety of ways to share and connect creatively, including curating a map of her favorite coffee spots around Tokyo. Welcome to the podcast, Kat.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks. Hey, it's lovely to have you here today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to get to talk to you.
Yeah, me too.
So our first question we ask all our guests is, what's your first memory of doing something creative?
I love this question. I have quite an abstract answer for this. So I think as soon as I opened my eyes, I've always been a very curious person. And I think that is kind of the precursor to creativity. My mum always used to kind of say I was quite destructive, because I used to break things apart. but in my mind, I was always just curious about how things were pieced together and how things worked, so that I could then create something new or use it in a different way. So I think that's where I first started kind of thinking about what it means to create. When it comes to an art practice, that was a little bit later. My uncle was a musician and an artist, and I would sit for hours just watching him draw these elaborate, like kind of futuristic, crazy drawings. And I would also just kind of help color in a little bit. I was always so enamored by his skill, but I never thought I could do anything like that. But he was the one who kind of really inspired me to go down an art path and kind of look at different ways of expressing myself through creativity and art. So
That's beautiful. I think, you know, through your photography, it's clear that you are really interested in how things fit together and like the shapes of things.
I love kind of breaking things down as well and not looking just at the whole of something, but looking at the pieces of something and then how I relate to those pieces.
Would you say that that's true beyond the visual as well, or beyond like even just, it sounds like what you're saying is kind of an engineering mind, like you're talking about an engineering perspective of like how things go together and how they relate to each other. And I'm curious if that's more abstract as well, like if you find that when you're writing or when you,
Yes, definitely. And I think my family is quite a mix. My granddad was a mechanic. So I would have the more abstract kind of creative thinking from my uncle and also him being a musician as well. I'm heavily influenced by music. And on the other side, I had my granddad who was very logical and sensible and reasonable in most respects. And he was like, he was a gardener and, you know, he was also breaking things down in cars and putting them together again and making them work. So I think there is this bit of duality inside of me. So I think, you know, it was kind of hard for me to really think about if I was a creative or not, because I was like, should I be someone who is an engineer because of that how I think in that way and how I break things down? But then there's this other part of me that is, I love colors and lines and textures and things like that. So yeah, but I think it's an interesting duality that I can play with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think as we get older, I wonder if you find this, as we get older, we find that we don't have to choose.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that's kind of what's so great about being curious and creativity and understanding that there is so much freedom in it. And I do worry about I guess the younger generation in our kind of social media world now, we all have to look a certain way, create a certain way. You know, we have to reach a certain level to be considered an artist. And I just think that's all nonsense, really.
Yeah, I agree. The creativity that flows through us all, which it just does, comes out in different forms for everyone. I think it's such a matter of just finding how it loves to come out for us individually.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what is really special actually is the journey. I think that's really what being a creative or an artist is being brave to go on that journey of curiosity, to see yourself, how you interact with the world and express it, but also be brave to make mistakes in trying to find the ways in which you can express that.
Yes, definitely. It really does require so much bravery. And I think that's something that doesn't come to the surface of conversation very often, but it's so true. The courage required to do it it takes something to put energy towards that, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So Kat, thinking about your journey, will you tell us a little bit more about your path to where you are today with your photography?
Yeah, sure. Path was quite you know, it wasn't linear. And I think I started out wanting it to be linear. But kind of like what we were saying before, as I've got older, I'm embracing that I'm not a linear person in any aspect of my life. So I studied photography at university. However, the kind of structured way that it was taught to me I didn't really like that. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much room for me to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was learning about all these amazing photographers and how they came into, you know, embracing photography. And I didn't understand at the time, but they didn't start off as was like, I'm going to study photography at university. Then I'm going to do it like this. Then I'm going to make all this money and go to all these galleries and la, la, la. They were just following, you know, their gut or their intuition and then created something. But how it was taught to me at university, it was more like, okay, this is how you make money. You've got to build a website. You've got to know all these people. Straight off the bat, you're probably going to be a wedding photographer to make any kind of money. And I was like, no, I don't like to take photos of people. So that's not going to work for me. So I actually gave up taking photos for maybe 3 years or so when I finished uni. And I was like, you know, I just wanted to be in the arts because I just loved being in that environment. And so I was working, assisting curators at the Victoria and Albert Museum. I did a little stint at the Tate for a little bit. And then I was working at smaller galleries in London. And then I decided I need a real job. And so then at this time, I think Instagram was coming around, was like kind of opening up. And then I thought it was the best thing since sliced bread. So you could just do whatever you want. There was no rules and had these cool little filters because I was, you know, indoctrinated in the ways of Photoshop and you have to use it like this and do this and that. And I was like, I don't have to do any of that. I can just take this, go, write a little thing if I want to, and boom, go. And so my creativity was reignited again. So not only was I really excited about expressing myself visually, but I got to see a lot of people in different parts of the world express themselves as well.
Yes.
And I found that extremely inspirational because there were no rules. So everybody else was also kind of doing the same thing of like, I'm just going to share this really cool picture of my cat or coffee, and I'm going to do it from this angle and use this filter. And so I started following a lot of people on there, mostly in Japan, actually. Mm. And so I think that's how, I mean, I've always been interested in Japanese culture, but I think that's how I, you know, my mind was more open to wanting to live here because I got to see it a little bit more through other people's eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And like real people.
Yeah.
Real lives, not so curated and published in a magazine or whatever. Like,
yeah, exactly, exactly. And then once I kind of let go of all of the reins of, you know, all of the things from my university degree, I started to just explore what photography meant to me again. Mm. How it didn't have to be something very serious. And I could just take photos of what I want. I realized that the things that really brought me joy were buildings and textures and close-up of everyday life. And I really just wanted to start investigating how can I document my life, but also bring a new perspective.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Is really, really key. And then when I did move to Japan, I started getting really into meditation, mindfulness practice. And then I got extremely excited when I understood the concept of kind of taking time to really be present in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to connect that with what I was doing with my kind of street photography. Like it was actually a meditation practice for me and I didn't realize it.
Right. Yeah. Actually, I was going to mention this. A lot of your photos remind me of the practice of contemplative photography, which I took a course in many, many years ago, maybe 10 years ago. Which you do these studies of color and texture and shape, it seems to me. That's when I'm observing your photos. It's like, oh, I haven't looked at this shape this way. I haven't thought about this pattern this way. You know, you are inviting us to really stop and observe, as you were saying earlier, the way things fit together and the way they relate to each other. To me, your photography, yeah, that's what it inspires in me as a viewer, is this curiosity and this sense of look again. Yeah. So yeah, I really am interested in your use of space and color and geometric shape. And so yeah, it made me curious as you're taking photos, as you're walking around and seeing what catches your eye, like what are some of the things that inform the photos you take?
I think a lot of it is light. I'm very partial to a good contrasty light. And because I think it produces extremely interesting shadows, and the textures of like buildings or even the vibrancy of colors really come through. And because there are lots of things around us that we just don't notice every day, the light really changes our perception of them. So I think, yeah, like when I first started trying to look at my environment a lot more, that was what really helped me to see like different aspects of everything is light, basically.
Right. Yeah. And light does feature prominently, like the contrast that you're talking about, it really, those do feature prominently in many of your photos. And I also really noticed your interest in shape and the way things kind of fit together or the angles that things take. Would you say, yeah, that's of particular interest to you?
100%. I'm an 80s baby, and the pops of like color blocking, pops of color, and really interesting, I don't know, really interesting shapes which came out of like in architecture around then and before that. I think it just really stuck with me as a child. My other uncle used to take me into, because I used to live in kind of the outskirts of the city, and he would take me into the city, and I would just be so wowed by all of the modern buildings. And so I think now it's kind of, I'm looking for interesting shapes and angles, and then trying to use light to also, have a look at a different perspective of that. And I think, there was one quote that one of my colleagues, I'm sure he stole it from somewhere, but we use it with our students who we teach poetry. And he was saying that all art is a communication. And so I'm trying to communicate either with the artist or the object. And if there is something that lights me up, which are usually angles, interesting angles, then I'm going to try and communicate with that thing using my camera.
It's interesting because Paige says she's drawn to like the angles and shapes. Well, for me, the first thing I notice with your photography is the colors. So like when you are you consciously drawn to certain colors or to colorful things, or is that just, a part of the photography that you do? Like how do you feel about the usage of color?
That's a really interesting question. I think, again, color, it's more of a feeling for me. There are certain colors I don't like, but I think it is because of the interplay with light. So, for example, purple isn't really a color that I'm that interested in. Like, I wouldn't wear it. I wouldn't choose it as an object. But if there is an interesting play with purple and maybe red, and then we've got some interesting light that's hitting it, I might be more willing to take a photo of that situation. So I think the color for me, it's very situational, and also the patterns that the colors create. So either that is like, I'm currently looking at a tree and there's lots of yellow and green. They're both my favorite colors, but I wouldn't usually place them together because of associations I have with those two colors. But in this situation, because of the randomness of the placements of the different colors, I do feel inclined to want to take a photograph of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the play. And I think a lot of, the things I stop to take photos for, it literally is just chance, because I could walk past or cycle past the same thing on a different day and I wouldn't notice or I wouldn't feel inclined. But because of how the light is interacting with the color or the texture, then I'm more likely to stay. So I think it's not really one thing. It's literally an interplay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like so much of what you are interested in is juxtaposition and relationship.
100%. And I try and not only capture that through photography, but also with people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I think that's maybe where I'm heading at the moment, is kind of taking all that I've learned about juxtaposition and interplay and kind of, you know, how can, thinking outside of the box in terms of how to combine things, but in terms of relationships with people and how I communicate with people and how I create with people.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so interesting that you put it that way, because I think we rarely think of, relationships with people as a creative process, but they are. They absolutely are, aren't they?
They truly are. They really, really are. Because, when we're conversing, it's just another form of art.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting to think of it that way, and to think of, literally everything we're doing every day is a creative act, right? And so,
100% is.
Right. Every conversation we have. And as you were saying earlier before we started recording, that you enjoy introducing people to each other and making connections and that sort of thing. And that sounds like another element of just what intrigues you in life is this connectedness and relationship.
Definitely. When I was going through my kind of spiritual journey a few years ago, I was looking at the concept of kind of energy and source and how everybody is in some way connected. And, I think every single expression is basically everyone just trying to reconnect on an energetic level.
Yes.
And, I think that concept is quite hard for me to explain, but I sometimes find it very hard for people to kind of be open to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's tangible.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not like a spreadsheet with numbers on it. It's not.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes it's kind of hard to believe, but I think we can all feel it, but we have to give ourselves space to remember how to feel it and how to express it.
Mm. And I think everybody gets there at a different time, don't they?
Yeah.
So until you get to that point, it's hard to wrap your mind around those kind of concepts, probably.
I think a lot of the time people actually don't realize they're actually doing it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
So it's like, when you have a conversation or when you hug someone that you love, or if you prepare a meal, or if you, make a cup of tea or a coffee for someone else, that is an expression of that energy.
Yes, absolutely. So. Yeah. Mm. And it's, it's also like, I think the foundation of the creative act is essentially like we are taking something that is not form and making it into form.
Yes. Yes.
In one way or another. And, you know, that cup of tea is something that did not exist before you thought to make it into form. And that form is an expression that is then conveyed to the other person and creates a feeling in the other person. And there's this interplay going on. That's so beautiful. And that's almost like I think of it as like almost like an energetic kaleidoscope.
Yeah. You know, there's
topic consistently shifting, changing, prismatic movement, you know, between each of us all the time. And it's quite beautiful when you notice it, when we're attentive to it.
Yes. And it's never, it's always unique.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Not just based on relationship, but based on context, the context of that relationship, the moment in that relationship that you're in, all of those things. Yeah.
It's interesting, like listening to what we're saying now, like all the work that we do is very much like intuitive, isn't it? And we have such a trust of our intuition, or we understand it to a certain point, but we're constantly using it. And it makes me wonder, like people who don't necessarily need to use their intuition every day in their work, it must be so hard for them to understand what we're talking about sometimes, or to feel it within their own body and make that connection, like you were saying, Kat. Like, yeah, my husband's an accountant, and I wonder sometimes, he's like, you know, there's no I don't know how much intuition goes into spreadsheets, so it must be a bit of a leap sometimes for other people.
No, yeah. I think that's a really interesting, you know, idea, because I think even in a spreadsheet, some people are just so great at seeing numbers and working with them. And to be fair, I've always, you know, I don't like math whatsoever, but I think it's just another language.
That's very true. That's very true. Yes.
And so even though we don't commonly see like the work an accountant does as creative, it is actually extremely creative in that we don't even know where math comes from.
Yeah, that's so true. I should be nicer to husband. Yeah, I think math is such an abstract thing for me that I'm just, oh God, just my brain hurts when I look at what he does.
Yeah. And I think that's where like there's always that conflict between people who think they are creative and think people who think they aren't creative. Actually, we are all creative.
Yes.
Misunderstanding each other.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yes. Mm. Yeah. And speaking different languages, as you say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true. So true. Okay. I should be nicer to my husband. So Kat, how do you think your experiences across cultures have impacted your photography practice?
Quite a lot. I think that, you know, I am third generation West Indian. I've always had difficulty in understanding my identity because I lived in a country where basically they colonized where I lived. Well, not where I lived, but where my ancestors came from. And so I never really thought about it so much growing up. But actually moving to Japan really blew that lid open on that can of worms for me, because I always felt, you know, I never really fit in anywhere, but I also did. It's very like this strange duality of cultures in London, and you're surrounded by this melting pot, which is absolutely beautiful in that I got to learn so much about different cultures, but not a lot about my own. So when I moved to Japan and people were always asking me, where are you from? That was a really hard question for me. And so I spent the last couple of years trying to really find out about more of my heritage from my ancestors. But also Japanese culture is very, not similar, but in terms of artistic practices, quite similar. But in terms of culture, like modern culture and modern societal culture, Japan mimics England, not mimics, but Japan is very similar to London in terms of like politeness and, you know, wanting to be clean. England can't really get that right, but it's there, want to be clean and like tidy and safe and da da da. So I think, you know, moving to Japan, it felt like a natural home, but just more elevated. And so the culture here, investigating it, or, you know, trying to live amongst it, was quite interesting, because I didn't have to kind of adhere to any cultural norms. And so I was able to be free to express myself, but also in a way that I could take theories and concepts from Japan into my own work. So like the concept of wabi-sabi, which I know is very popular everywhere, but as someone who grew up as a bit of a perfectionist, the concept of to find beauty in, what I took away from it basically was to find beauty in not necessarily the mistakes, but in the naturalness of something. That was really big for me. Because I feel like in my photography a little bit, because of like the lines and the geometry, I am trying to control. Wabi-sabi, there's in my photography, I can always see, oh, I should have nudged it here a little bit, or I could have straightened it here a little bit. But I'm trying to embrace that kind of wabi-sabi element, I guess.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it, in Japanese culture and in your photography, I would say, like, this is something that's coming through, is that juxtaposition or that relationship between the perfect, the straight, the aligned, and the more natural, ecological, like something coming in to disturb that or to, you know, show us that that is not growing out of the ground, you know, like that's not natural necessarily. It's a thing we've made.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I try and avoid any natural element because I want the stark man-madeness to kind of come through.
Yes.
But also in that, you can kind of see that actually, because humans made this, it is actually natural.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, trying to like have this kind of conversations of like back and forth of what is natural, what is not natural, what is perfection, what is imperfection.
Yeah. And I think that's something that Japanese culture really asks every day.
Yes.
We're living that question every day in this context here of, you know, yeah, what is perfection? How can we strive for it while also being human, you know, while also having human foible?
Exactly. And I think the relationship between the two is, I find it extremely beautiful. And I mean, there are times where I'm a bit angry at, you know, new developments and things like that, but I do love the interplay of the old, of the new, and basically of transience.
Yes. Yeah, Tokyo is so incredibly transient in every conceivable way. Jordana and I were just in Shibuya yesterday, and Shibuya, my husband, when I got home from Shibuya, he said, Shibuya is a whole new landscape. It's got a whole new face. Yes. And it's true. They're just recreating. I came to Japan in 2003, and the Shibuya that I knew is mostly just not there anymore.
Yeah.
You know? But it is, you know, the bones are the same. But there's a lot that is just being turned over and tilled and renewed, you know, all the time in Tokyo, whether we like it or not.
Exactly. And that's extremely different. Well, growing up in London, I think nothing really changed that much. Like, at the speed at which it changes in Japan, like I think I was very surprised by that. I would walk down a street and then the whole building would be gone overnight. And then, and then 2 weeks later, there's a whole new building there. So it's kind of, I think it's really, you know, that concept as well came up in a meditation course I did maybe 3 years ago, Vipassana, which is like a silent meditation retreat. And, you know, it was really embracing and not being afraid of change. And as someone, I experienced a lot of change growing up as a kid. I was extremely fearful of it. So I think that's another way that Japan has really influenced me, is that the embrace of change and
yes,
how it's great to document it, experience that moment, understand you're never going to have that moment again in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plenty more other beautiful experiences and moments that you will have.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that actually brings me to our next question, which is about, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about how, and even you mentioned Instagram, like just the fast paced movement of imagery
mm-hmm.
that is available to us at all times. Like at any second, any of us can see more images than we can possibly even digest. Right? And you also make zines.
Yes.
And I'm just so curious, like what that process is like and how you find it specifically valuable within this context that we live in we can look at whatever we want at any time.
Mm.
How does the experience of making and also like interacting with a zine as a reader feel specifically important or interesting to you within that context?
I think being an 80s baby, I grew up with magazines. And
yes.
What I would love is to just like sit down with a magazine and just spend hours
poring
over the photography or like, you know, the who should you date quiz or things like that. And I got to a point where I just had so many images and I was understanding that through this, I was expressing a meditation that I was having. And I really wanted to encourage other people to stop and just look at something very ordinary, but spend more time looking at it.
Yeah.
And I had worked with a blogger before and she always used to make zines. And then I, went to Tokyo Art Book Fair and, seen a lot of zines, but I wasn't sure about the medium because I didn't want it to be like a photocopied book or whatever. But basically what really got me into it was a good friend of mine who I met in England. We've known each other for like 20 years. He is a musician and he was like, oh, let's have an event. Let's just put on an event. We'll have music and we can just make a zine. And I was like, okay, sure. Why not? And I had all this photography and I was like, let me put all of this meditation into one little book. And because I had made books for my photography course, I really enjoyed, the actual process of curating and putting this story together. Even though there's no words, it's just like a visual story. So I think going back to the question, sorry, I've gone off tangent there.
Good. Waiting for it.
I think it's kind of, if you have this tangible object, my hope is that if someone has it, they'll sit down for a moment and they'll be absorbed into the moment that I had.
Yes.
I don't expect the person to experience it in the same way I have because we've all got very different and unique backgrounds, but I'm inviting them to really look at this moment of time and just, embrace it or think about it however they want.
Right.
Yeah.
So I've been literally just trying to encourage people to just take pause in the presence.
Right. Yeah. And it's such a different experience than the scroll.
Yes.
It's so much better than the scroll, isn't it? I too love magazines. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's just a joy to be able to sit down and, like you say, have that pause to look at something beautiful or think about something or think about that image. Feels like a luxury these days, to be honest.
It really does. I also think like the difference between a screen and a magazine, a big part of it for me is the texture.
Yes.
And when you're choosing paper, that was probably my favorite part of it. Choosing the paper, thinking about how are the colors going to come up. And when people are touching this, they're touching the scene as well. Whereas if you're scrolling, not only you're just not spending any time really looking at this, but if there is something that does actually catch your eye, you have to zoom in. Whereas if you've got it in a magazine, you can just bring it closer to your face. Like
you can
see the ripples in the paper and you can smell the paper and it's just a whole experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something that I've given so much thought to is like how the textures we interact with on a daily basis have just become fewer.
Yeah.
Because the things we touch, we're just touching so many more flat screens, like surfaces like that, that are the unmarred mostly, unless we've dropped our phone, like, or, you know, that are, it's just not the same experience as, let's say, waking up in the morning and reading the paper and then grabbing a book to take on the train with you. And then, you know, all of the things that we would have done 20 years ago, you know, just as a matter of course, they've all been condensed into this one object.
Yes. Yeah.
And bringing ourselves back to a place where we get to interact with objects in a way that's more mindful because it's a rare experience. I think it's beautiful that you're providing that for people.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the path I'm kind of going down now is trying to trying to explore how other people are doing that through other mediums. So through like ceramics and music and filmmaking, which I, you know, screen-based, but depending on how you're viewing it can really be an immersive experience. And, you know, even through food and gardening and like farming and, you know, the world is such a beautiful place for textures. I just really hope we can take a moment to really experience that a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because we can make that choice, can't we? We don't have to be attached to this one. So it's just making that conscious choice to do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So exactly. Kat, what's a project that's lighting you up these days?
I kind of keep hinting at it, but
I'm wondering. It sounds interesting.
So actually backtracking a little bit, before I actually took photography at university, I actually just had no idea what I wanted to do or how to express myself. So I actually started off doing journalism.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I was like, I want to be like Carrie Bradshaw. Like, and I want to move to New York and la la la. But yeah, so I did that for a little while. And then I kind of gave that up because I got a bit bored because I needed more visual stimulation. Anyway, all that to say is that through all these experiences, now I'm kind of looking back at all of the other creative expressions that I decided wasn't for me, and actually they can all work together. So I'm now writing only like a small little thing for Paper Sky magazine. And basically what I've been doing over the last few years is having amazing conversations. So it's kind of similar to what you guys are doing, amazing conversations with creatives, entrepreneurs, I can't say that word properly. Entrepreneurs. personal trainers and chefs and baristas and mixologists. And I am very keen to help people really understand who they are, but through some kind of influence or reflection, maybe might be a better way to frame it. So what I've started doing is interviewing different creatives and artists in different fields, people who have moved to Japan and also people who are native to Japan, and kind of exploring that concept of sharing energy and, you know, building community and what it means to kind of express themselves through whatever medium it is that they're kind of using. So I'm working on that right now. And I release two articles a year with Paper Sky at the moment, but I'm hoping to make a book. So I'm working with a photographer at the moment. And so, yeah, like I'm very excited to see where that kind of leads. So that's one of the biggest projects I'm working on, but also kind of curating events as well. So I'm working on a pop-up. I can't talk too much about it now because things haven't been finalized, but I'll let you guys know about it. Creating a pop-up, basically it's going to be showcasing Actually, I can't talk about it.
Okay, that's fine. We'll just have to wait.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really exciting, though.
Yeah.
And kind of using all that I've learned through my spiritual journey, and, you know, I really want to guess, like, literally what you guys are doing, but, you know, if I feel like you're doing it for me now, and that you're allowing me to listen to myself and, like, really kind of put all my thoughts and theories together and kind of express them, which is such a beautiful thing.
It's so incredibly valuable to talk about this stuff with other people who are also engaged in a similar process, you know? I think like we crave creative community so much, actually, and creative connection so much. And the average person doesn't have it in their lives anymore. It used to be built into everyday life. So we crave it. And I think anywhere we can find it, any way we can nourish it is so powerful.
And I think with Instagram, we're just seeing this like two-dimensional snippet into people's lives. And, you know, we don't see the whole journey.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that really puts people off from attempting to live a more expressive life. Because I feel, I mean, I can only speak from my own experience, but, you know, I always felt like, well, I can't do that because I don't have X, Y, and Z like they have from this little snippet they've showed me. But what you don't see is the blood, sweat, and tears behind the scenes.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yeah.
That's why I think magazines and books are a great way, and podcasts are a great way to kind of express and to show people the journey.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's such a, I mean, these things that we make that have so many parts that need to go together and require that labor of love, really, to be together. I do think that we feel that in the end as well. We feel that. And I think that's part of what may look intimidating from the outside, you know, where it's like, that must have taken a lot of time and a lot of work. And it probably did. But each little step was a doable step.
Yes.
Each little step was a thing that we could do.
Yeah.
And so we did it. And I think you're right that when we were just seeing the polished, finished product, that we think, oh, I could never do that. When in fact, you probably could.
Yeah.
If you want to. You know, if it was a priority, you probably could. It's just a matter of breaking those steps down into steps you know how to take.
Yeah. And also like just giving yourself permission.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah. So I think the work that you guys are doing and, you know, some of the projects I'm working on, I'm really hoping, you know, that more people see these things and can help, you know, really give people permission.
Yeah.
Embrace it. Like you don't have to, you know, have a trust fund to start a business. You don't have to have the perfect body to be a model. You don't have to, you know, be, you know, studied art and have a master's degree in art to be an artist. You don't need any of these things.
That's right. Yeah. When you are feeling kind of like outside your creative flow and you're like, well, I can't, I don't, I'm intimidated. I can't do that thing or whatever. What are the things that help you move beyond it? Like, it sounds like you're kind of outlining some of those now.
Yeah. I think one thing I do is step away from my phone. I get comparisonitis. So, you know, and I get it quite bad. And then I get really annoyed when I see someone who is expressing an idea that I've had, but I was just too slow. Or maybe they've expressed it in a way that I think is incredible and I just don't think I can top that. So one thing is to actually step away from the phone and to go to spaces that I really enjoy being in, to kind of reset and recalibrate. So whether that's at home, I create like a little spa night, have some music, sing along, or I will go to one of my favorite coffee shops and, you know, have a conversation with one of the baristas and, you know, or, you know, just experience that atmosphere, watch them do their art and, you know, really, that really inspires me. Another thing is going to exhibitions. I love reading books. There are some, you know, beautiful bookstores that I love that I go to for inspiration. So basically, I just go analog when I do that.
Oh, that's amazing. Afterwards, we're going to have to talk about bookstores because. Yeah, I love that. I love the, and it really, it's a thread coming through this conversation, isn't it? That there is a comfort in going analog. And
And I think, you know, again, like kind of what I was speaking a little bit about earlier, that, you know, the source or the energy, it's connected to all of the elements around us. And I, you know, I forgot to mention going into nature, but I think when we are reconnecting with that deep elemental part of ourselves, whether that is through having a conversation, going to the beach, or, you know, just having, getting a hug, I think that is just so grounding and really helps us to reconnect to ourselves. And then we can go back out at it and start working towards expressing ourselves again.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's just been such a joy getting to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah, loved it.
So if people wanted to find out more about your upcoming project or the work, you know, work you've done so far, where can they find you online?
So Instagram.
Yep.
So it's at Catalogs on Instagram. You can also find me at Paper Sky magazine. I write for the Japan Stories. You can just type my name in and I'll pop up. Another place you can find me, so on Instagram, I got a link to my coffee map. So these are my favorite spots in Tokyo. I'm currently working on another one, which I'm also excited about.
Is it bookstores?
That will be one eventually.
I'll be waiting for that one. Well, thank you so much. It's just been such a joy to get to speak to you and get to know you.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, so now it's time for our Ask Us Anything segment. We have a great question from Duncan here in Japan. Hey guys, really enjoyed your creative podcast with Kate Segura. I'm a fan of her music and now a fan of your podcast. Thank you, Duncan. Question for next time. Would you be a different artist if you hadn't left your home countries? And if so, how has your life in Japan influenced your art? Best wishes from a fellow creative, Duncan. Thank you for this question, Duncan. This is a great one.
It is. It's something I often think about.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah.
How often do you ponder this?
I actually really don't. I somehow have
interesting. Okay.
Tell me what you think.
Yeah, like I often think because when I came to Japan, the first couple of years I was still doing my creative work. And I did Design Festa 3 times and I was making quite a lot of artwork, really. But then I don't know why I stopped, to be honest. I can't pinpoint any particular thing, but I did. I stopped at some point and I kind of got into teaching and I was really enjoying teaching like younger children. And yeah, so I took, you know, I was out of my creative, you know, zone for probably, you know, 15 years almost. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what I would be doing in England with my creative work. I really can't imagine it. Because when, you know, when I left art school, it's so different to kids leaving, young people leaving art school now. And I had a physical portfolio that you had to take to publishers or design companies. Do you know what I mean? And I found that so incredibly intimidating that it made me sick. I just couldn't face it. And so when I graduated university, I took about a year off from doing my art, and then came to Japan. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know what I would be doing. I feel like, in terms of, like, I don't know what I'd be doing if I was still in England. But when I think about me in Japan now, I feel like probably I have more creative freedom and less, I feel like there's probably less judgment and there's less expectation put on me by external forces, be it, companies, be it people around me. I feel like I'm guessing I probably just have more creative freedom here.
Yes, right. I think so
Yeah.
too.
I
I
feel
think so.
like Japanese culture in itself, allows people to do whatever they want to do. There is a lot of freedom in the sense of there's a club for everything in Japan. Do you know what I mean? So, and being a foreign person in Japan, you're also given a different sense of freedom of, oh yeah, just do what you like kind of thing. People don't, they judge you in one way, and that only way is you're a foreigner. So regardless of what you're doing, there's no negativity in terms of a negative impact. Like, they're not going to judge you badly for the work that you're doing.
We have much more leeway.
Yes. Yeah.
And because you're right, the main thing is you're a foreigner, and that's hard enough to get past.
Yeah.
So
For a lot of
very
people, yeah.
often it just stops there. But yeah, so that gives us, I feel the same way. It gives us a lot of freedom to just be different. We're already so different,
Yeah.
really different, audibly different, we just are. So that means we can kind of do what we want without worrying so much how it looks to people, because we're already in the place of looking weird to other people,
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder about that. Like, do you think that if you had stayed in England, that you would have felt like more kind of boxed in by other people's opinions?
Yeah, I think probably I would have done something within the creative field, but not necessarily as an illustrator. I feel like that's probably the path I would have gone down, because my confidence level at the time I left England anyway wasn't at a point where people would probably want to commission me for work, because my confidence was too low in myself to go out there and be to promote myself. I wasn't able to do that.
Promotion is just a whole other set of skills,
Yeah.
isn't it?
And in that sense, as much as Instagram has, I have mixed feelings about it, it does make promoting yourself 1,000 times easier than 20 years ago, when you literally had to phone up a company, make an appointment to see the art director, probably get told no, and then keep phoning until somebody said yes. Like, that's far more soul destroying than only getting 5 likes on a picture on Instagram. Do you know what I mean? So when I think about it that way, it does give me a new kind of appreciation for social media. And that's more about my mindset than anything else.
Yeah, that's really interesting as you're talking about it. I think, because it becomes like your calling card, right? And you can just be like, this is what I do. And then somebody can, at a very quick glance, very easily see who you are and what you do. And there is that. And yeah, like I think there is obviously no way that we would be the same artists that we are now if we had stayed. That's because we're different people, right? And even though I've never given this question much thought, I think that's because I don't like imagine a parallel life for myself in the US. I just because it's impossible to imagine. I don't know where I would have lived or what I would have done. There was nowhere in the US that I felt like was my home that I had to go back to or that I wanted to go back to. And so that's probably part of it. But there, it's unquestionably true that I wouldn't be the person and therefore the artist I am without Japan. Japan is a huge part of who I am now. And I also think that becoming a parent here in this context probably changed my relationship to my work. It would have been a very different experience becoming a parent in the US. It's not possible to have the kind of freedom that I have here in the US. It wouldn't have been possible for me in my situation with my particular partner and my, you know, very likely where we would have lived. It wouldn't have been possible for me to have the freedom I have here. And the kind of freedom I have here is what a big part of what allows me to do the work I can do.
Do you think your creative expression would be any different?
Probably. Yeah, probably. I think that I would not be fully myself if I had never left the United States. Like, it's who I am to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, that has felt true since I was a child. Like, I always felt that I wanted to go outside the US, that I wanted to live outside the US from a very young age. And I think that if I had not done it, I would feel like I'm not living my full potential. Like that's not, I'm not living as who I am.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely, completely. It's interesting, yeah, because some people, you know, they don't have that and they can't understand why we would leave. And I think that in itself means that our creative expression needed something more than what we were able to achieve or absorb in our own countries.
I think so.
And I don't think it's a case of it would be better or worse. I think it's just, it's a different it's a different inspiration, it's a different input into your creativity that, you know, it wouldn't have felt as rewarding or fulfilling had we stayed.
Yeah, that feels true. Yes. And I think even now when I go back to visit the US, I love the US. It's my home. It will always be my home. It will always be who I am. You know, that's, it's just the truth. I was born there and raised there and educated there. It's who I am. And also, even when I love where I am and I love who I'm with, there's a feeling of like, almost like I need more than this. I need more than this, you know?
Yeah.
Need to, part of what I enjoy is holding a lot of complexity at the same time, like a lot, and playing with that complexity. And part of what Japan offers is boundless complexity. It's like, here is more complexity than you could possibly explore in your entire life. Have at it.
Yeah.
And that's part of what feeds me here, I think, is not understanding things, you know, wondering, well, what's that? What's going on there? Mm-hmm. Like, I need to find out more about that. Or like this one thing, you know, you can receive from Japanese culture, like one little nugget, and that could occupy you for weeks or months or years, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, when I'm in the US, it feels, obviously the US is also an extraordinarily complex culture. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to understand or not understand, as the case may be. And it just doesn't feel like enough for me.
So interesting. So for me, I feel when I go back to the UK, I'm so inspired by everything I see, like the nature, the art galleries, just walking around London. I get so much creative inspiration. But when I'm in Tokyo, I feel like I have more space to actually be creative.
Yes.
So I get my inspiration from the UK, but then my like physical and emotional sense of creativity is freer here.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, I think that what you're saying is really right on. You know, there's a lot more space and freedom here to give to my creativity.
Yes.
Than what I can really imagine having created in the US. But at the same time, who knows? Because it's been 20 years.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? We've been here for so long. So it's hard to even...
20 years is a long time. And I have a very close friend who very often, she's lives in the States, and we've been friends since we were teenagers. And she'll push back on me about, you don't know, Paige. You don't know.
Yeah, it's true. You don't know.
And it's not. You know, our imaginations can be so limited when it comes to ourselves, you know, and our own possible pathways and like previous iterations of our lives, mm-hmm. right? Like part of the reason I left the US was because I felt stuck and I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
You know. And so when I think about that, I think I would have felt stuck and I wouldn't have wanted to be there. Mm. You know, but maybe that was just my age or that moment of my life, you know?
And I think there is a certain part of it is, because I was talking to a Japanese friend who went to England, and she feels the opposite. She feels the same way about England, like, as we do about Japan. So I think maybe it's just when you move to a new country,
yeah,
you feel that way. There's a release of certain things, whatever they may be for each person. That when you move to that new country, it's almost like a fresh start. You can breathe again. Because she was saying to me, oh, it's so great in London because I can just sit by myself on a bench and no one looks at me strange. And she's like, in Tokyo, people would always look at me strange. And like, I feel the opposite. Like, when I'm in... Yeah. When I'm in Tokyo, I can sit on a bench and no one cares. But if I'm in London, people will be thinking, why is she sat by herself? So, you know, I think it's all just about, you know, partly perception and partly just starting new somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I do think when you start new somewhere, you just have to let go of a lot of stuff. And only take with you, like both literally and metaphorically, only take with you what you absolutely need. And there's an opportunity to recreate yourself and to be like, okay, who do I want to be now?
Yeah.
You know, and that opportunity really can come anywhere in any way. Mm. We are free to do that at any time we want to. And also, it's really a good impetus, or like a almost like a really exciting impetus to have your body in a completely different place where you're like, well, obviously I'm new because this is all new.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
So yes, thank you so much for this question, Duncan. It's an amazing one. And we love hearing questions from you. We love getting emails from you. We love all your feedback. So please keep it coming. You can reach us at the Creativity Cafe podcast. Wait, what's our email address, Jordana?
It's thecreativitycafe21@gmail.com. There's a link in the show notes, so you can just click on there and an email box should pop up. So you can send us any questions you have.
Yeah. And you can also DM us on Instagram. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like the Creativity Cafe podcast, please subscribe and share it with other people who you think might like it too. Subscribing means that you never miss an episode, which means that we get to share all of these delightful conversations with you, knowing you'll get to hear every single one. You can subscribe by going to the show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then just tapping on the plus sign or clicking on follow. It really helps the pod for you to do that. While you're there, if you'd be willing to leave us a rating and a review, we would love to have that too. We love to read what you think and hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings about the Creativity Cafe podcast. So please do go and leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everyone.